have always been really politically engaged, but really specifically in high school, I was registering people to vote, I did phone banking, helped organize community meetings, all for various political campaigns and prop campaigns. But I think after seeing the January 6th insurrection, and particularly the lack of repercussions against the people involved, I've become really disillusioned in electoral politics, and almost makes me lose hope a little bit in the impact of my vote and my political participation that for so long I highly valued.
1 year ago today, we watched insurrectionists breach the U.S. Capitol building. We've been looking back at the events of January 6th and what they tell us about law enforcement, extremism, and election integrity. And today, we're looking toward the future of democracy and of our political process. According to a new poll from Harvard's Institute of Politics, the majority of young Americans think our democracy is in trouble or failing. After the break, we'll kick off our conversation about the future of our democracy with three young voters. I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A podcast. Remember, to join future conversations, download the 1A Vox Pop app and leave us a voicemail.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're talking about the future of our democracy with young voters. With us is Imani Bennett. She's a junior at Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. She's also the president of Spelman Democrats. Imani, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Also with us is Victoria Simich. They're a high school senior in Carmel, Indiana. Victoria, it's great to have you with us.
Hi, thank you for letting me join.
And Ezra Meyer. He's a junior at the George Washington University here in D.C. He's also the director of public relations for GW College Republicans. Ezra, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Jen.
So, Victoria, I'd like to start with you. I want to hear from all of you on this. A year ago, when you first heard about the attack on the U.S. Capitol, what was going on through your mind as the day unfolded?
I was very confused initially. I go to a very, very large high school in central Indiana, which is very right-leaning. And so it was interesting to sit in a lot of my classes and hear the commentary from the students coming behind me, because a lot of them are on the right and I am not. So it was very interesting hearing like their takes on the situation before I really knew what was going on. So I was pretty confused about it until my teacher came up to me and checked up on me and like said something to me during my fourth period. And she was like, you know, are you doing okay with all this stuff going on? I know you're very passionate about politics, so I wanted to check in. And so then I started looking at social media, and I started looking at the news and what was going on. And I was like shocked. I was appalled. And it was honestly very terrifying.
Imani, what about you? Take us back to January 6th of last year.
So on January 6th, I remember this very vividly. I was sitting on my bed, kind of just relaxing, waiting for Congress to confirm Joe Biden as the next president. And then I remember seeing a whole bunch of rioters outside the Capitol. And I was like, Victoria, I was very confused. I didn't realize that such a large following had grown behind President Trump, who would actually show up like to the Capitol. So seeing the rioters break into the Capitol, I was very nervous. I was very worried, and it wasn't a day that I was like, I was just really worried about our democracy, and I didn't think that our country would come to the brink of political violence of this nature.
Now, Ezra, you're in a unique position because you're in college here in D.C. What was it like for you to watch the attack unfold, essentially in your backyard?
Yeah, so I was in my off-campus apartment at the time at school. And for those who don't know, the George Washington University is situated kind of in between the White House and the Lincoln Memorial, just a couple blocks up from the mall. So really in the middle of it all. And I'd actually just finished an internship in the Senate, like many of my peers at my school. And we had constantly been getting phone calls from people across the country urging the senator to vote one way or another on the various election results. So I'd kind of known beforehand that that it would be a big day. And I tuned in to watch throughout the day. And I, in the morning, watched the rally at the White House just a couple blocks over, and then watched the joint session of Congress as it turned into something that we weren't expecting. And I believe in the rule of law. I think that's one of the tenets of our nation. And so it was unsettling to see people resort to violence, because I think that's never okay. But what was also kind of strange is the fact that it was somewhat surreal, because I think we had all been a bit desensitized to violence over the preceding year. And so it was surreal, not just that it was happening, but that our reaction to it, I think, wasn't as profound as it may have been.
The events on January 6th were shocking, but not a complete surprise. For months, former President Trump falsely claimed widespread voter fraud, stole the election from him, or would steal it from him. 147 congressional Republicans voted to overturn the election results. And polling from Monmouth University shows that nearly three-quarters of Republicans still believe President Biden's 2020 election win was illegitimate. As a young Republican, Ezra, how are you reflecting on the party's influence on and response to the Capitol attack in the years since?
So I think the narrative that has been pushed over the last year is a slight deviation from reality. I think if you kind of look at the evidence, there has been a consistent condemnation from Republicans and Republican leadership regarding the violence that took place. Just a couple of days ago, Kevin McCarthy sent a memo to the House Republican Conference saying that it was lawless and wrong as wrong can be. Mitch McConnell called them criminals today and said it was disgraceful. But I think there's a lot of frustration amongst Republicans, and especially young Republicans, of this conflation that's been taking place and attempts to kind of use the lawless actions of criminals as the face of Republicans nationwide and just people who believe in conservative ideology. So it's kind of, I think people are very, people have mixed feelings about it, because they don't like to see violence. They don't like to see this happen to our Capitol, but they also don't like how they're being portrayed for having nothing to do with it.
Here's what Sophia, a 20-year-old voter in Atlanta, Georgia, shared with us.
Democracy in this nation was founded with the intention to protect white males above everyone else. And that framework continues to be exposed with each school shooting, each police brutality case, and especially when the Senate votes on bills, which is when minorities and underrepresented groups in this nation needs this nation the most. My role and every other citizen's role is to not end their political involvement with voting. We need to make sure that we're attending town hall meetings, volunteering to canvass for candidates that align with us, watching and reading the news every day, and making sure that we are analyzing the role every political party plays in the undermining of our democracy. I know it can be super easy to blindly support the party we most resonate with, but holding office holders accountable once they are elected is one of the most important things we as citizens can do to ensure that legislators are carrying out the policies that they promised us.
Now, a new poll from Harvard's Institute of Politics found that most young Americans ages 18 to 29 think our democracy is either in trouble or failed. And I'd love to hear from each of you how you define a healthy democracy. Victoria, I'll come to you first.
I think a healthy democracy is one where all citizens are getting a say in our government. So I agree with what she said earlier that, you know, our democracy is really only meant for white males. And I think that A, should be changed. And B, I don't think that is what a healthy democracy is. So in a way, I don't know that we have ever really had a healthy democracy, but I would not say that our democracy right now is to the benefit of all citizens.
Ezra, what about for you? What does a healthy democracy look like, and how close do you think it is to that reality?
I think a healthy democracy is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, as has been enumerated multiple times. I think that there was a lot of skepticism about whether we were a healthy democracy following January 6th. But I think one of the best proofs of the fact that we are a democracy is the fact that after all the violence was over, Congress marched right back in and got right back to work. I think that was an incredibly optimistic moment in our country's history when Mike Pence said, let's get back to work. And they finished and they went through the rest of the votes and they completed their duty. And that, I think, really changed the sentiment of the entire day.
Well, according to a recent study from the University of Chicago, 10% of Americans believe violence is justified to restore Donald Trump to the presidency. As young voters, how concerned are you that what we saw last year on January 6th, an attack on our seat of government, could happen again? I'll come to you again, Victoria.
I mean, I think now that, Ezra, as you were saying earlier, that our whole country has been so desensitized to violence with the protests over the summer, and of course then the attack on January 6th, I think that there are now protections in place, and I think that in a way we are slightly more prepared as a country for attacks like this. However, I think with how desensitized we have become to violence and how well and how practiced it is that we react with violence to a lot of things that we do not like, I think it's likely that there are going to be more violent protests. I mean, I don't know necessarily on the scale that this would happen again, but I think that there's definitely going to be a lot more violence in the coming years in our country.
Victoria, what issues will be guiding your vote in November?
I'm very passionate as somebody who was born a female. I'm very, very passionate about abortion rights. I think especially because we are on the brink of seeing Roe v. Wade potentially overturned. I think that's absolutely something that I'm going to be paying attention to, especially because that is something that directly affects me, but also literally all other women in the country. Especially, I'm also very passionate about water rights, especially since we have seen the pollution of Hawaii's water recently, and there are a lot of indigenous people on indigenous reservations who still do not have access to clean water. I think that is really unfortunate, and that's absolutely something that I'm going to be paying attention to this voting season.
Ezra, what about for you?
Sure. So I think we've kind of seen January 6th be the lead story every day since then. Like, there's nothing else going on. In reality, we're facing many issues as a nation. Our economy is, not as healthy as it should be. People are dealing with inflation, rising prices. I think the expanding influence of China and the CCP is really concerning. And I do actually give the Biden administration some credit there in their decision to enact a diplomatic boycott of the Olympics and the nuclear deal with Australia. But overall, I don't think that they're taking the threat seriously enough. I just think this incessant obsession with the past is not healthy for us.
Imani, what about for you? What's top of mind for you as we approach the midterms?
Approaching midterms, I'm really passionate about voting rights, being that I live in Georgia and seeing how we were such a crucial state to flipping the Senate. And we are becoming more of a purple state, and being that, you know, our own state legislature passed SB 202, which imposed a lot of voter oppression laws. In terms of voting rights, like Victoria mentioned, women's rights and abortion rights, I'm definitely paying attention to. And like I also mentioned earlier, how these large digital platforms are being held accountable for a lot of the rage that they're inciting online. I think that that's still being swept under the rug, and just making sure Congress will continue to hold these large companies and corporations accountable.
I had a conversation with my now 16-year-old niece in the aftermath of the insurrection, because I wanted to understand what she thought about what happened and just how she was thinking about the country as a whole. And it was a pretty sobering conversation for me. She was 15 at the time, and she said, "I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime, but I just feel like the country is approaching a breaking point." And I'm paraphrasing here, of course. She said, "I think we're approaching a civil war at some point." And I'm curious about the conversations you're having with your friends, with people who are your age, about the health of the country, the health of our democracy. Ezra, what conversations are you having right now?
I think, for the most part, pretty good dialogues. People are willing to listen. I think there are some people who aren't. There are people who unfriended me simply because of what happened on January 6th. But those aren't the type of people that I really want to interact with anyway. I'm open to speaking with anyone as long as they're willing to have a dialogue. And most people are. And that does make me optimistic that we can set aside political differences as simply what they are and acknowledge that we're all people. We can coexist. And that is really the basis of what our culture should be.
Imani, what about for you?
In my circles, I would say it's a pretty optimistic outlook, being that, like Stacey Abrams just announced her candidacy for governor of Georgia. So a lot of my peers and a lot of my Spelmanites, we are really energized to organize here in Georgia. In terms of, I guess, conversations across political lines, I have not been able to have as many as I would like to. So Ezra, if you want to connect after this, we can. But for the most part, it is a very energized youth coalition here in Georgia.
Just in a sentence or two, I'd love to hear from each of you what you wish elected officials understood about what it's like to be a young voter today. Ezra, go ahead.
Yeah, I think to not discount young voters and to take them seriously is really important, and just to listen.
Imani, for you?
I would say take us seriously and please be men and women of your word.
Victoria, go ahead.
I would agree. I would say take people seriously, and young people absolutely are educated and have all these opinions that need to be listened to, especially because we are the next generation of voters. So people need to listen.
Now, Victoria, you're going to cast your first vote in this upcoming election cycle. Is that right?
Yes, that is true.
And how are you feeling about that?
Well, I'm feeling a little bit nervous, but I know for a fact what I'm voting for. I'm going to be voting blue. But I remember when I was younger as a kid, I sat at the dinner table once with my parents and I told them, well, I'm not going to vote because I don't agree with either side. And I think it's all dumb. And they kind of looked at me in shock. And now that I'm older, I realize that that's the system, is that I might not agree with either side, but I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils, in my opinion. And I'm going to be voting for what I think is best for the future of our country and our democracy.
That's Victoria Simich. They're a high school senior in Carmel, Indiana. Also with us today, Ezra Meyer. He's a junior at the George Washington University here in D.C. He's also the director of public relations for GW College Republicans. And Imani Bennett. She's a junior at Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. She's also the president of Spelman Democrats. Imani, Victoria, Ezra, thank you so much for spending this time with us. We really appreciate it. Coming up, we'll zoom out and look at the national picture on youth civic engagement. A reminder to have your questions answered on future topics, or just to let us know what you think, tweet us at 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We've been hearing from young voters about the state of our democracy, and here's what Eileen and Alexandria shared with us.
On the anniversary of January 6th, I am even less hopeful about the possibility for justice than I was a year ago. I'm really scared that by the time I turn 22, I won't be living in a democracy anymore. We need to preserve our democratic institutions from anti-government actors like the rioters who stormed the Capitol, and prevent conspiracy theories like the lie about election fraud in 2020. I want to be hopeful about the future, but things look bleak. Our best hope for protecting our institutions right now is young voters and activists.
Eileen, thanks for leaving that message for us. Joining us now is Kay Kawashima Ginsberg. She's the Newhouse Director of CIRCLE at Tufts University. That's the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement. Kay, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Throughout the show, we've referenced a recent study from Harvard's Institute of Politics about young Americans and our democracy. And according to that study of 18 to 29-year-olds, a majority of young Americans say U.S. democracy is under threat, and over a third think they may see a second U.S. civil war. How surprised are you by those results?
Frankly, it's not that surprising. And I think you heard that tone from some of the young callers who left messages on your show, too. There is a significant amount of cynicism around a couple of things. One is the lack of response to youth activism and a lot of requests and demands that young people are making, sometimes risking their own lives and their health to be engaged in activism. And so they're starting to really believe that nothing will change. That's coming mostly from the liberal young people on the side of the left. On the right side, there's really that narrative about the 2020 election being fraud. And so there's another segment of conservative young people who believe that the democracy is truly broken because the election was fraud. So there are a chunk of young people who believe that and losing trust in democracy, but they're coming from actually different places. And that, I think, is sometimes against other people's stereotype about young people being uniformly liberal. That's completely not true.
I'm hoping you can contextualize where we are right now, because my sense is that this didn't start on January 6th, that this erosion of trust or faith in our democracy, the security of our democracy, that it precedes January 6th. Can you give us some more context?
Yeah, there are a few things. I think one of the things that we found in a recent poll that we did in 2020 was relative low level of democratic practices that are present in young people's lives. So in a previous study, we had found that the subset of young people, especially those who live in rural communities who have less education, whether they live in urban or rural areas, tended to have less access to democratic institutions broadly. It can be children's schools, it can be civil center, it can be arts and museums and all that. They tended to have less access, and then they believed less in the power of democracy, and they're less engaged. They were also less, more likely to vote for President Trump in 2016. And then in 2020, we repeated similar questions asking whether they participate in regular everyday practice of democracy, like making decisions with other people, participating in community-based problem solving, whether it's in school or with family and so on. Less than half of young people actually have those experiences ever in their past. And somewhat surprisingly, white people, especially if they're not college attendees or college graduates, they are less likely to have those experiences than people of color. And it was also true to young people of color with some practices. So I think there's some foundations that we've lost over time. So I mentioned education being quite weak and under attack in terms of social studies education, the kind of family and community practices that can really provide young people those opportunity to talk about issues or actually participate in problem solving, not name calling and problem identification. And then there is that kind of, lack of response from the government and the leaders that can really cause frustration and cynicism. And Jen, you mentioned that the president can't just make unilateral decisions. And sometimes we see that coming from the lack of information and education about how the political processes really work from local to state to federal level, because we're not teaching them. So sometimes there's this understanding or misunderstanding that if there's enough energy or enough voter intent, that outcome that we're looking for will happen in a really short amount of time. And that's simply not the case.
Now, your research organization, CIRCLE, estimates that 50% of young Americans eligible to vote turned out in the 2020 presidential election, and that's an 11-point increase from the 2016 presidential election. What else can you tell us about young voter trends?
So young voters have really become actually more diverse in terms of racial composition. That's in part according to the societal shift in demographic composition. But it used to be that the Latinx voters and Asian American young voters voted at a much lower rate than white and African American counterparts in the youth electorate. They're really starting to catch up. There's a sort of a massive kind of politicization of these subgroups of young people who are now seeing things like racism and police violence really affecting their communities too. So there's been a lot of solidarity around that. So that's one of the trends. The other trend that I would name is that the young people used to only hear about voting in election as they turned 18, and only rarely, because they were not usually the high propensity voter group. Now young people are doing this on their own well before they turn 18. So they often come from their friends who care about certain issues, know about it. And a lot of young people care about things like animal welfare, climate, and of course, healthcare, with mental health pandemic being at the front line of their consciousness. So they come from that as a 15-year-old or 14-year-old or even younger. And then by the time they turn 18, they're really ready to voice their opinion through voting. So the voting is no longer the only entry point to the political process. And that's really how we're seeing the changes in, say, 18 to 19-year-old voting being almost the same level as slightly older young people. And that was not something we've seen before.
Well, we know 2020 was an unprecedented election for a lot of reasons, one being the way people cast votes because of the limitations of the pandemic. How much of an impact did a change and in some places an expansion in voting methods shape voter turnout around the country?
Yeah, we did actually find that the easier the state made mail voting, as in no application needed, the ballot sent automatically, the more likely young people had higher turnout as a state aggregate. So there's a correlation there. The kind of the first voter's barrier to registration and voting is actually significant. So being able to remove as many of those as possible, same goes for automatic voter registration, is a really, really promising measure.
So, Kay, on one hand, we're seeing trends suggesting a loss of faith in democracy, but we're also seeing high degrees of political action. Elaborate on the factors shaping the youth voter ethos.
Yeah. So what Lenny just said is really reflective of what we're seeing in statistics. The number of young people who said they're engaged in activism went from just 5% in 2016 to 18% in 2018 to 27% in 2020. And that's really what we're seeing. And what we're kind of sensing from both cynicism and this passion for political activism is that they do feel the urgency to act. They know that the climate change is going to personally affect them and their community. Health is a real crisis for a majority of them, as IOP poll showed. So they feel like they really need to be the ones that are acting, especially because the government and political leaders are not being responsive. Right. So that kind of explains why they're really disappointed on one hand, but they know that there's really no other option. Then they need to keep working at that. But I do worry that it is exhausting to young people who, you know, feel like they're doing all they can and aren't heard. So Ezra said this, too, that they need to be accountable. They need to be willing to listen. And Imani said that they need to be people of their words. And so that partnership with the young people, being accountable, listening after the day of election and after they're elected into the office will continue to be important for the future of our democracy.
We hear about a concern about people retreating more and more into their echo chambers, into their bubbles. And I picked up on hints of that in our conversation with Ezra, Imani, and Victoria, that they're not necessarily having conversations with people outside of their own circles. And how much is that shaping not just political discourse, but the future of our democracy, if it's also happening with our youngest voters?
It's a really serious concern, right? Because if we're not able to connect with young people or other peers who completely disagree with you, sometimes on a fundamental issues, we can't solve problems. Starting with the founders, we always disagreed on many, many things. But traditionally, we have been able to work through those problems by finding compromises. Political leaders today, as young people would say, aren't being role models for that. So the poll also showed that by 2-1, Republican and independent and Democratic young people prefer political leaders that can make compromises. And that is not really what's happening at the federal or local political levels. Right? You're seeing a lot of fights, sometimes brawl in some local politics. And that is really a challenge for young people to really understand what it means to be engaged in democracy. It's not just voting, but it's also making compromises, listening to people that make you uncomfortable, and making solutions for that works for as many people as possible.
And just a couple of
things that they need.
In just a couple of sentences, what will you be watching for as we head into the midterms later this year?
I think we would, of course, be looking forward to young people's leadership, which will sure to happen. They will be leading the way and mobilizing young people and others. But also, I think I'm really looking forward to seeing invigorated civic education, recommit to the power of a democracy from other people who are supporting young people and young voters.
That's Kay Kawashima Ginsburg. She's the Newhouse Director of CIRCLE at Tufts. That's the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement. Kay, thank you for speaking with us. Today's producer was Catherine Fink. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. David Gurrell will be here for the News Roundup tomorrow. Hope you can tune in. This is 1A.